the Education Committee for Tuesday, March 6th will come to order. And I believe we have a quorum wandering around here among the pillars, and they've come out of the very good. And we do have two bills up today that are innovations in organization, structure, governance, approaches to schools, and there are some similarities and there are some differences, but I think they're ones that are worthy of consideration, and I'm not just saying that because I'm authoring one. Senator Chamberlain has one as well. But I'm, if Vice Chair is here now, the first bill up is the Senate File 2201, the bill that I've authored on Improved Achievement Through Individualized Learning Act. Well, Senator Nelson.
Okay. If Ted Coldry could come to the testifying table, please, to join Senator Olson. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I indicated, Senate File 2201 is an effort to encourage or give an opportunity for school districts to have an individualized learning school. It is not something we are imposing. It is an opportunity and an option. And the one to best describe this is Ted Coldry, who's been a leader in innovation in our state and across the country, and has expressed many of the concerns that we have over time of how you reach students that aren't, whose needs and learning needs aren't being met today. Sometimes that is because they are not.
Senator Olson, I don't think we're picking you up on the mic.
Sometimes they are not motivated. And in other cases, the structure of the school, the opportunities that they have are not what they need to be to meet the needs of young people. So I am going to ask Mr. Coldry if he would share his vision and reason for supporting him.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Mr. Coldry, if you could welcome to the committee, and if you could introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm glad to be back here. This is a marvelous hearing room. I go back far enough to remember when this was a storeroom. I'd like to say just three things quickly about the policy side of individualized learning. Most fundamentally, Minnesota could be getting a lot more than it is from both its students and its teachers. But excellence takes effort, and effort usually takes motivation. So most efforts, as that very nice piece that's in your packet from Jack Freimeyer makes clear, any serious effort to improve learning has to start with improving motivation. And motivation is individual. Individualization motivates. Individualization also boosts learning by changing pace. Achievement ought to improve both as students who need more time get more time, and as students who can go faster go faster. Individualization means competency-based progression. Traditional course and class school is age-based progression, batch processing, education being delivered, as people frequently say. Currently, most of the strategy for K-12 is about improving this traditional model. It doesn't talk much about differences among students, and it doesn't talk much about motivation. But as most every parent and grandparent seems aware, digital technology now makes it possible to expand personalized learning. I do remember Senator Wieger a year ago at the hearing when Tom Vander Ark came to the committee telling the stories about his children, or I suppose grandchildren. Intelligent tutoring systems can now adapt both to different learning styles and to the student's different pace of learning. There's a paper longer than you might want to read, but one that's quite important by Dexter Fletcher that's in your packet, based on experience in the armed services. And this is probably the future of learning. The schools that individualize under this bill would, of course, have to meet existing standards and graduation requirements, read, write, compute. But they would also be encouraged to seek and assess achievement beyond existing standards. People who work with incarcerated youth, for example, though young people often described as not doing well, talk about the knowledge and the skills that these young people have for which they get no credit. This is a mistake. A broader assessment might make the achievement gap look significantly different. The gap is partly a function of the way we define achievement. No more than with chartering can anybody predict what schools will do as they shift from instruction to individualized learning. Individualization might be course-based, might be interdisciplinary. The interdisciplinary might or might not be project-based. The second thing I wanted to say is that I hope you will see individualization. I think you should see individualization as a part of your strategy for system change. We are not going to, quote, blow up the system and start all over again. As I've heard occasionally some people say, even once in a private meeting, a commissioner of education. The only practical route to major system change is to have two different models running side by side with a gradual transition from traditional to new. You can think of it as a split screen strategy, as on the face of your television set. This is the way successful systems change. Just look at our communication system. We have traditional phones and we have iPhones. In our energy system, we have coal-powered stations and we have now solar power. Look, if you think about our automobiles, you can see that we have traditional gasoline-powered cars and we have now also hybrids and electrics. And a gradual transition occurs, just as we closed out analog television and completed the transition to digital television a year or so ago. Most of the effort today is to make traditional course and class work better, and that's fine. The effort to replicate best current practice should continue and certainly will continue. But it is important also strategically to innovate, which means opening much more widely to personalized learning in both the district and charter sectors. The formula for change, put simply, is innovation in a context of choice. This is the formula for making K-12 a self-improving system. It's possible that individualization can also bring economic benefits. Some of Minnesota's individualized schools, and there are a few, operate at significantly lower cost than the traditional model or appear to. We have a study going on currently. And should be able to report to you on that in a few weeks, at least preliminarily. If indeed an individualized model can be educationally and economically viable at the scale of 20 students per grade level, that is hugely important for Minnesota's small districts and small communities and for the legislature, which finances K-12. Bear in mind, too, the students are co-workers on the job of learning. Their effort makes a difference, and anything extra we get from students comes for free. Finally, although not least important by any means, individualization is bound to enhance and professionalize teachers' role, since in the school, it's only the teachers who know the students as individuals. The third thing I want to say is that legislation really is needed to make this happen. The legislature, and properly at times, mandates things, and at times it prohibits things, but it's important also and legitimate and useful also for the legislature at times to encourage things. With this bill, the legislature will be partly enabling but mainly encouraging individualization. Encouraging is necessary. Most people aren't going to risk doing what they can't feel is truly wanted. An individualized competency-based school will not be like traditional school. It will not have to teach what students already know. It will sometimes, perhaps often, have students outside the building. This will concern those close to traditional school. Powerful forces will try to drag individualized schools back into the traditional model. Louise Sundin, in the back of the room here, spoke to this from this table a year or so ago, and I can remember Donna Carter, who was superintendent in Robbinsdale, who had started an innovative technology high school in Robbinsdale, saying to me a couple of years later, month by month, I watch it becoming more like every other school we have. You will need to be firm about protecting these schools' differences. This is why the bill contains some of the strong language it does. It will take strong language to assure schools and teachers they can safely individualize their program. We hope you will encourage individualization. Your risks are low, and the return could be very substantial. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Coldry. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A lot of times we ask, well, has anybody ever done this before? And this bill does include not only chartering, but area learning centers and contract schools. But also, we have somebody here to testify that did individualize on his own initiative. So Mr. Pye is here from, is it White Bear Lake School District?
Yes.
And has had some remarkable experiences with this and is here to share a bit about it.
Thank you. Mr. Pye, welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself for the tape, please.
My name is Anant Pye. I'm a Maplewood resident, so my senator is here. He has also come to my classroom, and my school district is part of Senator Chamberlain's area, and he has come and met the students. They're actually the best advocates for this, so I invite you to come and visit my classroom because I don't do as much work in my classroom as they do. And they have both seen that at work. Just give me a moment.
Yes.
When I introduce myself, I say I'm a third grade teacher. However, truly, I'm somewhere between a first grade teacher to sometimes, depending on the student, sixth, seventh to eighth grade teacher. Because the range of abilities that walk into my classroom, much like that of any teacher in any classroom, especially if they are elementary students, is a rather gigantic range. And I'll show you this very quickly. But I want to address this question: can all children learn? I believe absolutely yes. If they can start at their level of learning, progress at their pace of learning, and thirdly, each student gets the teacher's judgment and expertise at all times. This is much unlike the kind of classroom that I attended when I was a student, where the teacher is addressing a whole group of students. I'm often at the side of a student, working with that student, or maybe two or three students. Meantime, I have students working on systems that I have set up in the classroom alongside a website to which they go, and from there they're on activities that I have guided them to go to. And there is a lot of learning happening while I'm not even in direct contact with the student. I did this in my second, started doing this in my second year of teaching. This is my fifth year. And when I started much like the kind of education I got. I used to stand in front of the kids and try to speak to them and try doing lots of different experiments, almost all of which was feedbacked with desks opening and shutting, pencils dropping on the floor, and two or three kids going after it. This was kind of the response to me for what I was doing to them, which is not engaging the students on learning activities. I needed to figure out how to get them doing learning and not misbehaving to get my attention at all times. This is data for my class from the first, from the year before I started doing individualization. I had multi-age students at this time. I had second grade and third grade. I only extracted the students that were third graders in this group. What you will see is that we started in fall. We have students performing in the 7th percentile at the top, the first student, and the 8th student is at the 99th percentile. This is relative to some millions of students that take the NWEA MAPS test across the country. Now, I want to highlight what this translates to in mathematics. So the student that is at 7th percentile is in need of learning something as simple as adding 6 plus 6, let alone more complex math. Whereas the student at the 99th percentile is ready to learn in third grade how to add fractions. And then you have any number of children that are anywhere in between. Their scale is wide. And this is, we have 57 to 58,000 third grade children in Minnesota today. And all teachers like me are facing this when they open the door for the kids to walk in the door from day one of the school year till the end of the school year. The very next year, now this year I had all third grade children, did not have any second graders. And I had 21 students. You can see once again, in the fall, I have a student at 2 percentile, and 21st, at the top of the class, 99 percentile student. And what I have done here is I have shown the winter, spring, and the change that occurred once I started to individualize their learning. So on the left-hand side is all of my students in my class. Now, I have comparisons. My class moved from 61 percentile mean in fall to 68 percentile to 72 percentile. The class median, which started at 66, moved to 82 percentile. This is a substantial change as compared to the data down here for other classrooms, starting at 63 percentile. In fall, winter was 64, and spring was 64. If you add up, there wasn't sufficient change. This shows student growth. I don't want you to mistake that there wasn't any student growth. Student growth did occur, but the needle did not move. There was not growth in the number of in the results the students achieved beyond that of their yearly expectation. What happened in my classroom in the meantime is they moved from starting at about third grade level to near end of fourth grade level. So this pattern continues. I have a few more slides and I'm not going to detail every one of them, but you'll see that the growth occurred. And one other thing I want to highlight is that the highest growth clearly was possible for students who performed low to begin with. And you'll see that there has been substantial growth in the students that were clearly 60 percentile or 70 percentile and under in the fall. I do want to address one student, number two, insufficient attendance, no matter which kind of classroom, has little impact on outcomes. So all these slides are in your packets, but you'll see that the same sort of thing continues. This is for reading. The year before, I started to individualize. Once again, I had second and third grade students at the time. Reading the first year after I individualized, and there was substantial growth in the students that started out low.
Mr. Pye.
Yes.
Could you go back a slide to where you, one slide prior? I was just curious what happened to student six there in going from 78 to the 32nd percentile. Is that, does that have something to do with motivation, do you think?
Well, I don't specifically recall the student, but it is not uncommon for a student to occasionally, they're 8 and 9 year old children, they will call it quits. Mm-hmm. Press and be done.
Thank you.
It doesn't mean that the child was actually regressing. It's likely that it's possible too that the child was sick.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So while we're at it, I want to highlight this statement from NWEA. They do assessments for students across the nation. They say students who achieve typical growth remain at approximately the percentile score over time, which means that if you have a student in the low percentile range, they're kind of admitting that through their school, the time in school, by the time they graduate, they're more than likely to remain a low student. You start out low, you likely finish low. I believe that there can be a change induced in the system by way of the things that are proposed in this legislation that can affect that. Math MCA, the other assessments that we do, my class had a proficiency rate of 86% compared to 58% proficiency for regular classrooms. That pattern continued. Began in 09-10 with 95% proficiency as opposed to 78%, and it continues also in reading. Not as substantial, but if you look at it, I get virtually no additional support in math, whereas I get Title I support in reading. And you can see one of the other common myths that I have heard in the hallways is that one of the reasons children don't do very well in math is because they're not as good at reading. Both years that I have seen, my students have outscored by proficiency in math than they have in reading. So I do not believe that challenge in reading translates to challenge in mathematics. So central to this, I believe, is what goes on in schools. Regular classes have fixed time to learn a topic, which leads to variable levels of learning. Whereas in my class, where it's individualized, variable time to learn leads to fixed amount of learning. That could be in any number of things. Whether you're learning time, and I have children in third grade who needed to learn what the hour hand was and the minute hand was, and children who already knew how to tell time. Each of these students need completely different sets of support, and it's really difficult for a teacher to do it all by himself or herself. But with the aid of the carefully chosen technology, and I will admit there is a lot of technology being deployed in schools, and I don't believe any of that is creating enough results. But I do believe if you do first analyze the needs of the students and then deploy the technology that matches their needs, you can induce the systems that motivate the children to learn and thus get these skills into them that are functionally important. I'm not talking about AP calculus. This is stuff they need to know for survival in the real world. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pye.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, do you have some other testifiers here today?
Ms. Holly Marsh.
Ms. Marsh, and also, is there a Mark?
No.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Marsh. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Marsh. If you could introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee. My name is Holly Marsh. I am here today to illustrate for you what individualized education can do for students. I am a senior at Avalon Charter School. We are a project-based, teacher-led school in St. Paul. If you'll open up your packet on the front page and I believe on the back page, there are a couple of pictures of Minnesota New Country School and Avalon, which have pretty much the same model. At our schools, students complete Minnesota graduation standards through independent projects and seminars in an atmosphere where we each have our own desks. As you can see, it's not a traditional school. It actually more looks a lot more like my work cubicle at an office, if you can say. So that's what we're talking about today. I have spent the past 6 years at an individualized school, and through my time there, I've learned that when education is made relevant to students' lives, two things happen. The first is that a passion for learning is instilled and fostered in students who may have lost it. They may be returning that, or they may be getting it for the first time. But also, success can be achieved and sustained in multiple dimensions and definitions. We're not talking just about test scores here, so I want to make that clear. Over the past 6 years at Avalon, I have been encouraged to explore my interests while meeting Minnesota graduation standards. A few examples are, last year I took a statistics and pre-calculus class, and I passed along with the majority of my classmates the MCA math test on the first try. That was a big feat that I'm glad is over and in my past now. This year I'm teaching myself physics with the help of a textbook curriculum, as I did with chemistry last year. The majority of my peers chose to take classes for these subjects, but I work best by myself and at my own rate of progression, and so I chose to teach myself instead. This mixture of independent projects and classes in a non-traditional framework and schedule has also allowed me to invest my time in various activities outside of school, mainly internships. At age 14, I began volunteering for the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area, a 72-mile river section of the Mississippi River in the Twin Cities. That's a national park unit. And at age 16, the day after my 16th birthday, I became an employee. So I now spend every Saturday and federal holiday working as a park ranger. And during the summer, I help manage the junior ranger program and also do curriculum design and programs for the public. So that's something that I would not have been able to achieve at a traditional public school. So I owe my school a great load of thanks for that accomplishment. In 2009, I was also the Youth Volunteer of the Year for the National Park Service, which wouldn't have been possible otherwise as well. It is really inspiring to watch other students take control of their education and invest themselves in things that they love to do. A 2011 graduate of Avalon completed a senior project, which was about 300 to 400 hours, on a permaculture design, where he interviewed about a dozen different community experts, and his final product was a sophisticated two-scale land use plan for his house that was absolutely incredible. Another student, a friend of mine, in her sophomore year, took the Lord of the Rings trilogy and turned it into a graphic novel that is extremely professional and beautiful. She not only enjoyed the process, but she also learned about the different literary and historical context of the pieces as well. What I really appreciate about this bill, which is why I'm here today to encourage you to vote for it, is that it encourages schools to broaden the definition of achievement. When students attend schools like Avalon or Minnesota New Country, schools that individualize and innovate, they are able to create portfolios of work that more truly demonstrate their competency and their knowledge. This includes project proposals and finalizations, rubrics where students help grade themselves, and different things like that. This ties in right in line with competency-based progression rather than simply age-based progression, which has been extremely beneficial for myself and many other students that I have daily contact with. When I entered the seventh grade 6 years ago after being homeschooled for 4 years, I had two primary concerns. And the first one was a school that specializes in individualization going to adequately prepare me for life after high school? A lot of students I talked to who went to my local high school, Roseville, didn't believe I went to a real school because when I told them about it, they thought it was crazy. And so naturally, I had those concerns. The other concern was what I would merge on the other side with not only my diploma, but with my passion for learning intact. I'm a very passionate person that I love to learn, and I was afraid that the system was going to remove that from me. As it stands today, I will graduate in June with a 4.0 GPA, all of my requirements met, and with a passion for knowledge acquisition and civic engagement that is absolutely stronger than ever. I'm very proud of that, and I appreciate that as well. Next year, I will begin classes at St. Paul College while I continue my profession with the National Park Service. One day, I would like to return to the Capitol as an elected member of this legislative body. That's something that I hope to have happen at some point. Thank you for your time today. I encourage your support of this bill, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Marsh. Very good testimony. I just hope you don't live in my district. But I encourage you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Olson.
I think Ms. Holly Marsh is doing a tremendous testimony of your story. And I think pursuing and getting an enriched life in another endeavors is the right path to coming even into the legislative process. Having some other life experience, not just politics, makes you, I think, would make you a fine contributor. And you're not going to be hanging around that long anyway. So don't worry about it. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Olson, this is a great bill. It's so exciting to hear about competency-based learning and value-added assessments. And so I look forward to hearing more. Senator Olson, I'm wondering if you would like to walk us through the bill or if you would like Senate counsel. Senator Olson, would you like to walk us through the bill, or would you like Senate counsel to do that? I know we're pushing up on we have to leave this room at 4:30 today, and I know we have another bill before us.
May I just offer an author's amendment?
Yes, Senator Olson.
I would move Senate File 2201, but I would like to add an author's amendment.
Yes, the A3 amendment?
The A3 amendment. This corrects a couple of provisions. Now, if I can find my
Senator Olson has moved the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape that she would like.
What it does two things.
You don't have it yet. Okay.
Okay. You haven't passed it out yet.
Okay. Senator Olson, would you like Senate Counsel to review the bill with the amendment language?
I'm just going to tell what it amends first, and then.
Senator Olson.
Oh, good.
The first change is on page 3, line 20 and 21. And in the bill is introduced, one of the options that has to be successfully completed by individuals in here is either an international baccalaureate or advanced placement test and receive a score of 2 or higher. We are increasing that to 3 or higher because that is the level at which it would gain college credit. And on page 3, we are also deleting a section that relates to licensure of teachers. The Board of Teaching already has a waiver process that allows for teachers with varied credentials to be able to function in the project-based learning model of school. So we are taking that provision out. And that the rest of it just changes the lettering to accommodate that move.
Thank you, Senator Olson. The A3 has been moved. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment's adopted. Senator Olson.
If you would like to have the council walk through, that's fine. Otherwise, I could do it too.
Ms. Butler?
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Hranica actually worked on the summary for the bill, so maybe
Mr. Hranica, we'll get it firsthand.
We'll put it to work.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. And we should have a summary being distributed here any moment now, so each one of you will have a document that summarizes this. Starting with Section 1 in Article 1, Individualized Learning Schools, the citation, the bill will be cited as the Improved Achievement Through Individualized Learning Act, Section 2 relating to individualized learning schools. Subdivision 1 establishes the purpose of the act. Subdivision 2 relates to the creation of individualized learning schools. Paragraph A stating that an individualized learning school is to be a charter school, a site-governed school, an area learning center, or a contract alternative school. And it establishes an application process, an amendment process for becoming an individualized learning school. Paragraph B states that the approving authority for an individualized learning school has to be either the authorizer of a charter school or the district for the school district for any site-governed schools, area learning centers, or contract alternative schools. And paragraph C directs the individualized learning school to describe the nature of the individualized programs that it will be implementing. Moving on to subdivision 3, the subdivision 3 outlines the application requirements. And those will be listed in the summary. Paragraph B of that states the application for an individualized learning school must include graduation standards in addition to those that are provided by law, and that those standards will require a higher level of attainment, as is currently outlined. Paragraph C, a student, in order to successfully complete at least one of the following in order to successfully graduate from an individualized learning school: a college-level course through post-secondary enrollment options, an individual international baccalaureate or advanced placement test, and receive a score of, that's, I believe, 3 or higher now, right? Is that the...
Well, 4 on IB, 3 on AP.
Thank you for the clarification. I didn't have time to read the amendment. And the third requirement being that they are able to attend a supervised work experience program approved by the Department of Education as a part of a secondary vocational education program. Subdivision 4 outlines the waivers that are available to individualized learning schools. That they must outline in their application to become an individualized learning school, and that includes exemptions from school calendar requirements, hours of instruction requirements, and curriculum requirements under current law. Paragraph B. Oh, thank you. Paragraph C allows contract alternative school approved by a school district as an individualized learning school. It allows a contract alternative school to be exempt from and subject to the same laws as a charter school. And paragraph D allows an area learning center to be exempt from and subject to the same laws that govern a site governed school. Subdivision 5. If I lost my place here, I might apologize. That two paragraphs. Paragraph A outlines individualized learning schools' responsibility to its authorizer or the district. Paragraph B designates the responsibility to the authorizer to ensure that the site, the authorizer must ensure the site's compliance with the contract agreement, and it authorizes them to terminate a school's status as an individualized learning school if it's determined that they are not meeting the terms of those contracts or agreements. Article 2, Section 1, relates to graduation requirements, and it directs the school district to grant credit towards graduation requirements for successfully completed courses from non-Minnesota post-secondary institutions accredited by an agency that recognized by the United States Department of Education. Section 2, revenue to a self-governed school. This authorizes a site-governed school to be allocated compensatory revenue generated by its current enrollment, and it allows unspent revenue to be carried over for following years. It eliminates the current eligible uses for administrative fee and by site-governed schools, and limits that administrative fee to no more than 5% of the total revenue. And it describes new administrative expenses as new eligible administrative expenses as a site's prorated share of services reported as administrative in the district's most recent audit, the site's prorated share of costs for district-wide special education, and services agreed to within any contract between the school and the school board. Section 3 eliminates language that previously allowed 9th and 10th grade students to enroll in post-secondary course only if the students were necessary to offer the courses, and now allows the 9th and 10th grade students to enroll in a post-secondary course if they can accommodate those additional students. Section 4 once again, lost my place, excuse me. Section 4 is what? Eliminates language restricting post-secondary institutions from advising or soliciting the participation of secondary pupils on financial grounds. Section 5 allows a pupil to enroll in a post-secondary course and receive both the credit for both the secondary and post-second at both institutions, secondary and post-secondary. Section 6 eliminates a restriction that prohibited the Department of Education from making payments to school districts and post-secondary institutions for a course taken for a post-secondary credit only. Section 7 allows a student that is enrolled in a post-secondary course to receive that a credit for that post-secondary course and now become eligible for funding of transportation, fees, textbooks, materials, and transportation under current law. Section 8, relating to the pupils that live 40 miles or greater from an eligible institution, this would now allow the pupil to receive secondary, both secondary and post-secondary credits under for accelerated or advanced courses offered to students that live this distance or greater from an institution. Section 9, this eliminates any the restrictions on a single-purpose authorizer of a charter school. And under current law, these restrictions on single-purpose authorizers are limited to, they're not able to limit applications to any single curriculum, learning program, or method. And it directs the Commissioner of Education to approve a single-purpose authorizer to those that limit their focus to schools that are designated to closing the achievement gap, including pre-K and primary grades, or that create a partnership of grades 9 through 14 with a post-secondary institution. Section 10 allows a post-secondary institution to recruit and solicit participation from secondary pupils and post-secondary in post-secondary enrollment options based on financial grounds. And the Section 11 is a repealer of 124D09 Subdivision 3, and that is relating to post-secondary enrollment options, exceptions, and intermediate districts.
Thank you, Mr. Hranica. Senator Olson, thank you for this great bipartisan bill. I see we have authors Stump, Bonoff, and Chamberlain on here as well. At this point, before we take questions from the committee, and I know we're, as I said, we're bumping up to that timeline, I do want to offer if there's anyone in the audience who would like to testify. Do we have any comments from audience members? Mr. Heller, please approach the table. It just has to be very brief, though. We just have about a minute, so I hope you can give us your great, concise thoughts in about a minute or two at max. Mr. Heller, if you could identify yourself for the tape, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Rick Heller. Thank you, Chair and members of the Senate Committee on Education. I come here today to unofficially represent the twice exceptional and print disabled. I'd like to provide a handout if I could. It's on the IRSA flexibility. It talks about what I'd like to talk about if I'd be willing to do that.
Mr. Heller, we would be glad to distribute that handout. I don't know that that particular issue has anything to do with this bill, but we will be glad to hand out. If you have that handout available, that'd be wonderful. And while you're getting that out, Mr. McHenry, do you have comments? Mr. Heller.
Thank you again.
You could conclude your remarks, please.
Yes. What I'm handing out is it's called IRSA Flexibility Request. Everybody can find this on the Internet if they got their computers revved up. On page 285, I believe, and also on page 25 through 26. It's about universal design for learning. In 2009, the Capitol in House File 2, universal design was asked by the University of Minnesota to be put in statute. The AMA organization called the National Center for Educational Outcomes.
Mr. Heller, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. We're going to need to move on to the rest of the bill here today, but I'm sure every member has a copy of this and would be glad to discuss it with you in light of a bill that this might pertain to. So,
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I think that this bill opens the door for the opportunity of individualization. That's the very thing that it relates to Mr. Heller's concerns. You know, and I've shared those, when those that have difficulty with print media. A lot of that is because they haven't learned to read. And we have to, we know that young people can learn to read, and we want to be sure that that individualizing of instruction that meets the needs, that their learning needs, will correct that so that they aren't handicapped by that through their life. So I appreciate his constant attention to this, but I think that we are working toward that end, not necessarily the precise way in which he is proposing, but clearly that we are concerned and consistent with that.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
Just the one sentence of
Mr. Heller, yes, your final remark, please.
My final remark is, does this act include universal design principles as, and does the waiver go into this act? Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Senator Olson, would you like to answer that briefly before we turn it to Mr. McHenry?
Well, I have not. I appreciate that Mr. Heller has gotten to, I don't know, was it page 285 of the waiver? It was 607 pages, and I will admit to not having read the entire application for that waiver process. But it is addressing the fact that we do need to individualize, and not everybody learns in the same way. And I think the elementary secondary education, the No Child Left Behind, was compartmentalizing too narrowly and labeling success. And I think we were looking for waivers that would allow us to be more flexible and individualize, and that's what some of these bills are aimed to do.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Mr. McHenry.
Mr. McHenry could probably amplify on that.
If you could introduce yourself for the tape, please. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, the Department of Education. Just would like to, thank, obviously we're just kind of walking through this bill, but do want to thank you all for the opportunity to testify on this, and we look forward to working with Senator Olson moving forward. Obviously, we, from the department perspective, we do support, alternative paths. We do want students to be as successful as possible, and how we can have avenues to help them along the way is something that we'll be supportive of. When we first saw the bill introduction, I will say it kind of brought to mind, Madam Chair, one of the bills that you had authored already, dealing with students putting together their individualized plan of what they will do, post high school, and we definitely appreciate that bill moving forward. But with that, we do look forward to working with Senator Olson and some of the ideas that have drawn out. A couple of things that we do want to just raise as concerns. In the beginning, there is a purpose statement, and on line 2.4 to 2.5. We think this is a great idea of schools that are finding new ways of delivering services, and how can we replicate those with other schools. This is something that charter schools are already supposed to be doing, and that's something that we're, as a department, looking forward to working with charter schools to find ways that they are delivering individualized ways of academic excellence that we can replicate in other areas. So that's one area that we see that might need some strength, but we appreciate that being in there. Under 2.28 to 2.33, what this will do is, instead of the commissioner approving, right now the Department of Education, the commissioner approves charter schools, this would allow the authorizer to approve the individualized learning school. And so I think that's something that we'd want to take a look at, because right now the commissioner approves the affidavits from charters authorizers to start or expand charter schools. So as the department still has the oversight and of charter schools and other schools, that's something that I don't think that we'd want to give up, considering there would be some significant changes under this proposal. So that's something we'd like to work at.
Madam Chair? Yes, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you. Mr. McHenry, I thought that when we made that change in law a couple years back, when Senator Saltzman carried the big change, that the commissioner approves the authorizer and that the authorizer approves the charter school.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, member, Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I'm sorry if I confuse that. I guess what I was trying to say here is what this would do is it allow the authorizer to approve the school rather than the department. So we'd still like to have that oversight.
Madam Chair and Mr. McHenry, so
Senator Bonner.
So I just want to point out to it's actually just mirroring the change that was made with regard to the charter school law.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, members, I think this is something that we would like to take a look at because there would be some different waivers under this bill moving forward. And then as we move down under the waiver section, just a few things we'd like to point out. It does on 3.29 and 3.30, it gives waivers from under rules that deal with, for example, Minnesota Rule 3501.0110 is the curriculum shall include opportunities for all students to learn. This is taking a waiver from that. Two of those waivers, there are required documentations for programs audit of their curriculum. And then further, one of them, it deals with an opportunities to learn and for remediation as well. So I think that's something that we might want to take a look at moving forward.
Mr. McHenry, could you wrap up? I know we're running out of time.
Okay.
McHenry, I think didn't you receive a copy of this bill a couple weeks before it was introduced? Or is today the first time you've seen it?
Madam Chair, members, this is something that we have received and we have been reviewing and we have been trying to examine the impacts as well as all the other bills that have been introduced for education as well.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. McHenry, I would appreciate if you could identify these in writing or an email and send us to it so we can pay closer attention to it.
Madam Chair, members, what I can do is just wrap up then and not go into the details. I think we just wanted to just highlight some of these for you all to think about, but if you'd rather have that not in committee, I can make sure I can do that as well.
Mr. McHenry, I think we all would like to have that in writing, please. Thank you. And just so you know, this is headed to higher ed next, so there is another stop. Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Senator Olson. With that,
Madam Chair,
I see a question. Yeah. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. I know we're pressured by time, but this is a big bill, so we need to take the time to ask some questions. And I do have some questions from Mr. McHenry, who left, because I do want a response from the department with respect to the monitoring and compliance. I do want to hear from you. Overall, you know, when we provide this flexibility, I think that we need to be very creative, Senator, with respect to, you know, what is that we need to do to close the achievement gap and offer opportunities, and I'm all for it. On the other hand, I think that we're doing a lot of things in the name of closing the achievement gap and providing this kind of flexibility without asking for, well, if we offer this flexibility, how do we monitor it? How do we measure the outcome? And what do we do if that's not working? And in fact, that's happening with some of our charter schools. We can do some of this work with the charter schools today. So my question to the department is, do you think that this bill offers language that is strong enough for the state to offer some kind of monitoring and measuring the outcome so that we can go back and say, well, this worked or it didn't work? I don't see any language in the bill. And particularly in page 11.2 to 11.6, I think it says that the commissioner may approve single-purpose authorizers, which limit their focus to authorizing schools, etc. So on one hand, we're giving kind of flexibility to the schools to do this work, to the districts to open these programs. On the other hand, we're saying, well, you know, you're responsible for letting us know if this work and doesn't. Does the department have an opinion on how these work? Because ultimately, you're going to have to come back here and let us know what's going on. And I just don't see the two things kind of connecting in this bill.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, appreciate the question. Specifically, are you referring to in that section on 11.2 to 11.6 to the single source, single
right.
purpose authorizers?
And in that? General, yes, both.
And Madam Chair, members, obviously, through the at the Department of Education, we do you know, obviously do our best to oversee what districts are doing. One of the things that we've been excited about, I'm trying to be quick here, we've been excited about the waiver that we did get because it gives us some opportunity to measure in different manners and provide some different interventions in schools. But at the same time, I don't think that we feel that we have a monopoly on all the good ideas. So as different ideas do come forward, it's something that we do want to take a look at and see the perspective where everybody is coming from. So it's difficult to say that, you know, how exactly this would work. I think there still needs to be some work done on this. One of the issues I did jot down is, and looking on this in regards to the single-purpose authorizers, is that in the current law, we prevent single-purpose authorizers, and that was in order to ensure that, you know, authorizers are more, you know, accessible to and being open to chartering diverse educational needs. And so that's something that we think is a good idea. But obviously, you know, this is something that is a large issue, and this is a this bill is doing several different things. And I think this is something that we need to, you know, obviously we've asked to discuss this in writing, and it's something that we are more than happy to sit down with Chair Olson, and at the same time offer that to anybody here, Senator Torres Ray. We'd love to come in and sit down and talk with you as well on this and other issues as well.
Madam Chair. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, just want to make one comment on this. Because I think it's what we've grappled with for years, and the department has as well. Is the department there to help, or is it there to just regulate? And I think sometimes those roles are not necessarily compatible. There's been a great deal of interest, and I think greater receptivity of the schools out around the state when the department has played a role of being able to bring to the attention of schools resources that can help them innovate and develop this. Now, as Mr. McHenry said, not all ideas are generated in the department, and I think we know that whether it's that department or any other. But nonetheless, if they are taking a helping role, I think you build better rapport and relationship with the schools you're working with than trying to focus too much on that oversight and, you know, control aspect. And I think some of this is that when we're talking about some innovative schools, we're also looking at things that have got some research base, that there's some evidence that these kinds of things work, but it takes a commitment, and there's other ingredients that take to put them into place and make them function. And so I don't want to see our department become something that becomes a barrier and more hurdles and hoops to jump through. I think that's part of this. This isn't transforming the whole system. It's allowing for that kind of innovation to bubble up within schools, and we've provided a framework for it. And so I'm looking forward to discussing and seeing if we can't work through these issues and resolve that, knowing that it's the students first, but in that process, we need to be able to have the proper guidance and assistance to those who have the passion that are, as we've heard in our earlier testimony, for serving each individual student's needs and doing it in a way that isn't always the case in the way our system is structured.
So, thank you, Senator Olson. Are there any other questions from the committee? Any other comments? Okay. Members, just before we continue on here, we will be reconvening tonight at 6 o'clock in room 123 to take up Senator Chamberlain's bill. I'm just curious to see if the testifiers might be able to return for Senator Chamberlain's bill at 6 tonight. I'll let you think about that, Senator Chamberlain. You can let me know how you want to proceed, but I don't know how we could get through your bill in 10 minutes.
Why can't we go to 5?
Senator Olson.
Well, I would renew my motion that Senate File 2201 be recommended to pass and re-referred to
higher ed
as amended, and re-referred to higher education.
Yes, Senator Olson renews her motion that Senate File 2201 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to higher ed. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you.
With that committee, Senator Chamberlain, will that work for you and your testifiers at 6 p.m. tonight, room 123?
Well, I would have other desires, but I will make it work, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. You know, as we're bumping up to our committee deadlines, this is inevitable. So thank you, members. 6 p.m., room 123, we're adjourned until then.
Hold a minute or stairs.